Well, happy Friday evening, everyone. This is Pam Stack. I'm your host for Authors on the Air. We're proud to be part of the Authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I want to give a couple shout-outs tonight to Underwriters, Poise Pen Productions, Dalton Creek Candle Company, and Dee Dee Corbett, author of The Amaretto, which you can find on Amazon. I also want to give a big shout-out to Get11.com. They are our new underwriters for authors and readers who want a different kind of experience than Amazon. You're going to like Get11.com. I also want to say hello and thank you to Robert Gregory Brown. Not only is he a great suspense and thriller novelist, he's a very fine musician and composer. He created and plays our theme song. So thank you, Rob. You can visit him at RobertGregoryBrownWithAnE.com. Continuing in March, we are honoring Women's History Month by talking to the best of the best women writers during our own Women Writers Month. My guest tonight, Toni McGee-Causey, is a dear friend of mine. I have to say that right up front. We share some personal history together, and we've had a lot of laughs, too. Toni authored a new book called The Saints of the Lost and Found. Now, if you follow me at all on Facebook, you know I have said consistently that this is probably the best book I've read in 10 years. The Saints of the Lost and Found is probably considered Southern Gothic, almost Southern Noir, I'd like to say. But without further ado, let's talk to Toni. Toni McGee-Causey, welcome to Authors on the Air, my friend.
Well, hey, Pam, and thank you for having me. I love being here tonight.
I'm so glad you're here, Cher. How are you?
You know, I'm doing great. It's been a crazy week. It's always a fun week when your book first has its very first, you know, book birthday. It you know, came out this week, and it's just lovely to see it out in the world and alive and, you know, in people's hands. That's just always so gratifying. So I'm over the moon. I'm having a great time.
I love it. I love this book. I love this book because I've never read anything like it.
Thank you.
Tell listeners, please, just a little bit about the story, but enough to really get their motor running, okay? Because this is a very different book than anything out there.
Well, thank you. The story is the story of Avery Broussard. She is a woman who can see lost things. And so whenever she walks by someone, she sees everything that they've lost, from car keys to a phone to a loved one. And she can usually pinpoint where it is, but not always. Like if you lost your car keys in a parking lot, she might see that it's in a parking lot, but not which parking lot. So there's a lot of downside to having that ability because people want to use her for it. And the story starts when she has failed the FBI. She was trying to help find a young girl who had been kidnapped, and she fails, and the girl does not make it. The girl does not live, and she wants to run away from everything, but her father calls her and tells her if she does not go home, her brother will die. And her brother is the best, you know, family, everything that she's had in her life. But she knows if she does go home that she will die, because her father's ability is the ability to know when someone is going to die to the millisecond. And he told her 10 years earlier that she would die at the hands of the man that she loves. So she has to make that choice, and that's the opening. She has to make that choice. Does she go home to save her brother, or does she run and try to save herself? So that's the start of the story.
It is a curse for her because
it is.
She can see lost things, and there's generally so much sadness with things that are lost and angst and anxiety, whether it's car keys, as you first stated, or whether it's a person. There's mm-hmm. never a happy memory when something is lost, correct?
Right, correct.
Now, the story unfolds a little bit that Avery's family – I don't want to say they're gypsies, but they're kind of gypsy con artists. They behave like gypsies because they go from town to town, but they are con artists.
Yeah, I call them grifters. I mean, they are
right.
Really intentionally thieves and con artists. There's not a sense of survival, you know, trying to work a con in order to just simply survive or live or anything. But there is a true sense of greed in those parents.
And they're wealthy, you know, aren't they?
Oh yes, they're quite wealthy, and Avery is their tool, and she was their tool as a young girl, and it was a brutal upbringing on her part. Her history with her father.
The thing I found fascinating with this story is it is not a book that you can read quickly. You know that I read a lot of books, and I generally can zip through one in about a day and a half. This isn't that there are that many pages in this book, but the story, instead of like a coring the apple type of a thriller, this is a very slow peel the onion type of a thriller.
Right.
The tension builds every single chapter. I found myself immersed in Avery Broussard's world, and it was scary.
I'm so glad.
It was lonely, and it was scary, and it was, I don't know, Tony.
Claustrophobic.
It was very claustrophobic. It really was. That's the word. Yet I have not ever read anything like that. I had to go back and read the book again. Because even though, you know, I read it slowly, because you had said to me, this is not one you're going to read through quickly. You were right. But I wanted to go back and make sure that I picked up every morsel on the page. And it is true that when you go back and you read a book again, even slower than the first time, you do pick up little bits and pieces that maybe your eye doesn't see the first time. I have to tell you, though, this is one of the first books in a long time that I read dialogue out loud. It is so rich.
Thank you.
So rich. You are a resident of New Orleans. And
I am.
And so you're very familiar with the Bayou and Zydeco music and the French Creole, and you have all those little tools at your disposal. Yet I recall a couple years ago, you and I were talking, and you said, I don't want to write romantic comedy or romantic suspense anymore. I want to write about someone different, the misfits.
Yes. The misfits, yeah, I did. I loved, and I just have to say this because I have such fabulous readers. I really, really, truly loved writing the romantic comedy. I enjoyed it thoroughly. It was caper thriller. It just happened to be funny. I still refer to it as Die Hard in the Swamp kind of, you know, Southern Fried Romancing the Stone kind of things. You know, I tell people. Yeah, Bobby Faye was always, you know, in my mind, she was always Wile E. Coyote just after he had gone over that cliff and looked back at the camera with that oh shit expression.
Exactly.
That's how she first popped in my head, and she was a tremendous amount of fun. She was kick ass, take no prisoner, but you know, and you know, blows up everything in her path, you know,
but a heart
you know
of
accidentally.
Gold.
It's heart of gold. It's never her fault. She doesn't really mean to, and she was a blast, but I had explored that part of what I had wanted to do writing wise, and I felt like in that trilogy, and I did do a wrap up novella for it. That's actually free if anybody subscribes to the newsletter. All you know, those things are free. There's like three little novellas there, but I felt like that had encapsulated what that goal was, and
right.
I could have written another story about her, and I had beautiful letters requesting, you know, more stories, but
sure.
I felt like anything I did there was going to end up being derivative of that world, and I really wanted
yes.
to do something different and look at the darker sides of life and the, you know, flip that coin and look at the other side of that coin for a little while and explore the things that you can explore when you're doing a darker book that you don't have room for when you are doing something that is comedic. And comedy is an extraordinarily tough skill. It's something that I just happen to love to do. But by the virtue of what it is, there are times when you have to look at the absurdity of the world and find the absurd and find the cockeyedness of things and go that way. You can't really go dig underneath that cockeyed ideas and weirdness and the pathos and explore that, because you would kill your tone. Whereas in a darker book, you can go lighter at moments. You can have those you kind of need those moments of laughter to sort of balance, the dark. And so you get to do a little bit of both. But I wanted to explore that angle of writing and grow. I wanted to grow as a writer, and I felt like this was the direction I could go and grow in. And I had lots of doubt. I had many years of struggle and doubt over it. And I have to credit, I have some fabulous readers, and I think some of them are listening tonight. And I don't know that this book would have been finished without those letters. And I don't think readers understand how important they really are and how valuable their letters are to authors when they write in. And I mean, sometimes they may not get, a personal response from me, like for a couple of weeks, because things are crazy and I don't get to sit down long enough, because I value sitting down and giving them a true response. And I'm not going to try to, a quick one-off letter, or give them a form letter, and I had letters from them that said, "We'll follow you wherever you go." And that is a gift. That is an amazing, unbelievable gift that a lot of the readers, that have followed Bobby Faye for years and written to me for years and, been my champions, and they're my heroes. They really are. They have inspired me beyond, anything I can ever say. So I credit them with the fact that, this book exists and it made it all the way to its birthday. Because they are the reason.
Sure.
They are a huge strength.
You've had a lot of things going on in your life from the time you wrapped up Dobby Faye and finished this book. Now, most of your friends, most of us know that you are a NOLA girl through and through, and that you and your husband are renovating a place on Bourbon Street. And that has
it's not actually on Bourbon Street. It's actually very close to Jackson Square, so we don't have quite the noise of Bourbon Street. So I'll clarify that, because we're going to fight that crazy.
It's close enough.
It is.
But this has not been an easy process for you. I mean, I'm grateful for the fact that your husband is a contractor. This is a wonderful thing, instead of trying to tackle this as just, lay people, in other words. You've had some personal tragedy. But one of the wonderful things that's happened is that your photography has just blossomed and bloomed, witnessed by the fact that exquisite book cover is one of your photos.
Oh, yes. Thank you. Thank you.
My God.
Yeah.
I know that you've loaned and given, actually, because that's how you are, photos to other authors to use for their book jackets. Photography helped you when you were writing this book?
Oh, it was a tremendous saving grace. It was, there were times, when, like as you had said, we did have a terrible tragedy in our family. We lost my brother to cancer.
Yes.
And when you go through grief, there are times where you are lost. Your life, you get kicked completely down and you don't know how to get back up again, because the world isn't making sense anymore. And everything has changed. And you wake up every morning and there's this adrenaline that hits you. It's like a download of shock into your system, because you wake up and within a heartbeat or two, you realize everything's different. And you can't approach the world the same way. And I was very much in that mental place, and I couldn't write. I couldn't really accomplish things that I had been trying to work on, and words fled. I couldn't sit down and string sentences together and anything. They'd be anything more than just dreck. But photography gave me that outlet.
Sure.
It did. You know, I'd been doing photography since high school, but I'd never gotten really serious about it. And I got serious about it because it was this way of telling a story, but telling it with a camera without having to rely on words. And that was a very healing process for me. So it helped me get back to writing.
And so, how did you choose? The cover is so exquisite. I have to say that again.
Thank you.
Did you know you were going to use that photo when you did it?
No. I really didn't. Here's where that started. I was aware that readers who were familiar with my work, my previous work,
right.
I was afraid that they may pick up this book thinking it was another type of comedy or caper or, you know, whatever, you know, romantic, whatever you want to classify Bobby Faye. You know, I call
it
a caper. But
it was a caper.
I was really afraid people would pick this up if it had the wrong cover, and they would misunderstand what they were getting. And that would be terrible in my eyes, because I don't want anyone misled. I would rather not make a sale. I'd rather somebody say, you know what, that's not my cup of tea, I don't want that.
Sure.
Than them buy it because they think they're getting something, and then they are really disappointed. So
right.
I sort of started off, you know, the photography thing. It was just a mental exercise. I thought, well, one day a publisher is going to ask me for cover ideas, because I've been so fortunate that, you know, my past, you know, publisher did that, and they were very kind about it, and they did listen to things, you know, if things bothered me or whatever, and listened to suggestions. And so it was, you know, sort of in anticipation, and I knew that it was going to be difficult to articulate visually what I could see in my head. And I thought, well, I'll just try out some images. And I actually tried out a little something before this idea, and it wasn't working, and I knew why, and I can't explain to the audience why, because it actually gives away a secret. And my agent actually pointed out, and she nailed it. I couldn't put my finger on it when I realized, you know, she's dead right.
Right.
And so I was struggling, and I just wanted to come up with something, and I literally woke up with this image in my head. I had dreamed it, and was startlingly clear, and I knew I had to do it. It was not an easy task, because I had not done any, well, I think I'd done one piece of composite work before that. So I had to learn an entire new set of skills to pull this off. And so it took a little while, just because I was, you know, learning as I went. And when Jean came along from the Roadrunner Press, you know, my editor, and she saw it, she was like, oh my God, can we use this as the cover? And I love her for that, because I wouldn't have asked her, but you know, I just showed it to her, and she jumped all over it. And in the meantime, I do want to give a shout out to Murphy Ray, because Indie Solutions, Murphy Ray is a fabulous, fabulous designer. And she had taken the cover and done the text, the font and stuff on it too.
Yes.
You know, and we use it almost identically the way Murphy did. I think we only changed one font somewhere for a little bit clearer print. But Murphy's brilliant. She took something that was just a photo and turned it into a beautiful cover. And, you know, I was in love with it. And I'm so grateful that so was my publisher. So that's how that came about. It was really more accidental than it was in any sort of intentional, you know, plan.
Yeah, but it seemed kind of intuitive to you, I think, wasn't it? It was very intuitive.
It did. I had to do several things with this cover to convey elements of the story. There, you know, every single thing on that cover is relevant, but it's not necessarily a spoiler. And
no, it isn't. That's true.
And And so, but it gives, it tells you at first glance how dark and serious the story is. I don't think anybody can be misled once they see it. And that was key to me. It gives you a sense of the genre, and it gives you a sense of the darkness. And I don't think you can ask a whole lot more of a cover.
You spent a lot of years writing this because in between a lot of things were happening in your life. Do you think that there will be a sequel to this book? Might there be something beyond Avery's story? Or do you think that you've said what you wanted to say about this story and maybe you'll move on to something completely different?
Well, the next thing that I'm moving on is different. It's dark. It has some brutality in it, but it's more of a historical thriller type nature than this is. Without being too cryptic, I mean it's different. I've talked at length with both my agent and my publisher about a sequel to this, and I will not say never. I think there are some stories, and I know little pieces that I've planted in this story that are from,
they're
the seeds of the next one. But I don't want to start writing that until I know the complexity of it will match the complexity of this one, because I think it would disappoint the readers when you have followed the Mobius strip of this story and how it weaves back in on itself, the way it weaves back in on itself multiple times. I think that is, I hope that is part of the deliciousness of the read, that it's not just about, we can call it suspense, and that's a great word for it, but it's that complexity, that layer, those layers.
Yeah.
And that was not, I didn't wake up one morning and plot this. These were things that I, oh God, it was so painful. And there were times where I would hit brick walls and think, I don't understand why I can't make this work. And I, had friends that would help me peel some of those layers and help me, they would read it, and they would be able to, if nothing else, at least point to, well, this isn't working for me kind of thing, so that it would help me get some clarity about it. So,
There is another story there, and I think I know that we're both talking about the same one. But interesting to me, you're right. There are so many layers in this book. So many. Like I said at the beginning, it's like peeling the onion. You have a new sense. This book is not a joyful book. It's a deeply moving, deep down inside you, really grabs hold of your heart, of your organs, and only as you peel the layers does the hold kind of loosen up a little bit. And damn if you think you know where it's going, and there's a couple false endings, which I love because, I was talking to Jeffrey Deaver the other night, and he says, you got to have more than one ending. And I'm thinking, boy, did he nail that? And Tony sure did. The book is just, and you used an economy of words, which is, again, Deaver's favorite expression, an economy of words. This book is not quite 300 pages long. Mm-hmm. The story is so full. It's packed. It's packed with emotion. It's packed with narrative. It's packed with some of the most exquisite dialogue. And
Pam, thank you.
Yeah, it just really moved me on a level that I can't think of a book that I've ever read like this. I keep saying that to you, Tony, and I know you must be tired of hearing me say it, but maybe not. But But
you know, I think when you see me and it's tattooed on my face, I don't think you'll know. It's such a compliment.
Thank you. You know,
when you go many years and you're struggling and you think, oh my God, why am I even doing this? This is insane. I know that there were so many people who said, you know, aren't you finished with it yet? You know, like at least 1,000 times, and I would keep thinking, okay, I think I'm finished with it now. And then something else would occur to me and I'd realize, okay, no, I'm not.
But you know something, Toni, there's no extraneous words in this book. So your editing was just spot on, whether it was in your initial storytelling and copy editors and all, they really just did an exceptional job on it because, as I say, I think the book is, 293 pages or something in the advanced reader copy that I have, the galley that I have.
Right.
But
give a shout out, I really did have, you know, my editor at the Roadrunner Press, Jean, absolutely fabulous. I mean, just fabulous. I joked, and I had great editors before that. I mean, there were different people who edited for me along the way and gave me great insight. So, you know, not taking anything off of anybody, you know, in that way.
Oh,
but
no.
Jean, it was so funny because I kept saying to my husband that I'll know when I found the right editor for this book because that person will help me take this to the next level.
Teased
her today. We were talking today and I was teasing her. I said, yeah, you know, the first time I got those edits back and I saw all those red marks, you know, I wanted to stomp around like a 2-year-old, like she touched my words
Right.
Exactly.
I love it.
But one of the things that you look at and one of the things, I mean, she didn't have to strike a single sentence in the entire book. We didn't move anything around. She just went in and helped me tighten things. But when I saw what she had done, you know, I realized I'm not the word technician that she is. And she excellent at that. And I just admire that strength that she has. It's a beautiful strength. And she's so kind. And in the way that she does anything, I just can't recommend her enough. I mean, she's just so kind.
Oh, good.
But
yeah, so
she's going to help. She's not going to let.
Right.
Well, yeah, she's not going to let me slack either. And that's the beautiful thing too.
That's an important thing. Sure.
Oh yeah, yeah. It's real easy, you know, for a writer to, you know, pitch a fit, and you know, an editor to
right.
Well, I mean. And I'm not saying, you know, this is not personal. I've just seen it happen. You know, writers get upset and they don't want editors to touch their words and they want it to go out their way because, hey, they're the writer. And maybe they are just stronger in that area than I am. But I always want somebody to look at those words and make it stronger. You know, I think a book is a team effort. And
yeah,
I was thinking it
takes a village, doesn't it, honey? It takes a village.
It really does.
Yeah.
Let me take a break here for just a second.
Want to just remind everyone, this is a trademark copyrighted podcast solely owned by the authors on the Air Global Radio Network. I am speaking to, first of all, my friend, if you couldn't guess, but also the magnificent Toni Meek. Toni has written what I think is the best book. Probably, I doubt anyone's going to come close. I have some really great books on my 2016 best of list, but you're really going to have to step up to the plate to beat this book. Toni Meek-Ikazi wrote the Bobby Faye Caper series and has spent now a few years coming up with The Saints of the Lost and Found. It is an exceptional work of fiction that is unlike anything you've ever read. If you want to call and ask Toni a question or say hello, please do. The number is 347-633-9609, and I'm going to give someone an ebook. 347-633-9609. Toni, did you feel like you got something out of you? Like something was kind of hanging on inside you? Because you always talk to me about, you know, kind of get it. You had to get something out. You weren't really sure. did you, right. Are you happy that it's done? And did you feel like
it was,
you know,
I am. It's very cathartic.
You went to the writer's spa and you got it all it washed out of you, right?
I did. Yeah. There were several truths about life that I knew were important to this book, and I'm not going to say them on the air because that's part of the discovery, but
yes.
I don't know that in the beginning that I realized how heartbreaking some of those truths were going to be and how vulnerable I was going to feel as an author having to dig into those truths, because I think when you write something this dark, you expose a lot of who you are and what you understand about the world, and that's a very vulnerable place. And that was a little scary, but at the same time, I think it was very healing for me to be able to say, okay, this is my truth as I know it, and be able to tell this kind of story, because it does deal with loss, and it does deal with grief, and it does deal with healing in a lot of different layers and ways. So,
boy,
you're
not kidding. Color me stunned when I got to that part. You know, this is a story that you think you've got a handle on what's happening, and then all of a sudden, the road curves again, and it's an amazing thing. It's an amazing thing, Toni.
Thank you.
So unexpected. I know I keep gushing about it, and it's not like I'm fangirling, because you and I are friends, and I don't have to fangirl around you. I can just tell you the truth. But this is a spectacular work, and I'm thinking, boy, whoever doesn't read this has lost out on a masterpiece. Tell me what's next for you. What's going on with you, girlfriend? What are you doing next? First of all, are you still doing your photography?
I am. I'm still doing that. I haven't done as much of it in the last 2 or 3 months because of all of the, between the holidays and Mardi Gras is really the end of our major holidays. You know,
right.
We kind of sail through Christmas because we're all looking at Mardi Gras.
Well, you were there live and in person, weren't you? You cracked me up with some of your pictures.
Yeah.
I know. You couldn't email back
to me
because you were crazy for Mardi Gras.
I know. I ride on a float. So I ride in the Knicks parade. It's the largest all-female parade in New Orleans, and we have a blast. Our float number 17. Shout out to my girls. We had a blast, and I love it, and it's just so much fun to be on the float and to give out throws and find people in the crowd who maybe hadn't gotten something yet and watch their face light up. I mean, that's just the best thing in the whole world. With all of that going and with, all of the book stuff going, I just haven't done as much of it right now, but that's about to change. My studio, as soon as we get the building finished, which will be very soon, my studio will be set up and I'll be able to start shooting and processing on a more regular basis. So, expect to start seeing a lot more of that side of my world. And I think I need that part that feeds that creativity of the other part, so it's, It's all good.
What has changed in your subject matter with your photography since the book has been released?
I spent a lot of time sort of trying to figure out who I was as a photographer. And I think that a lot of photographers, they maybe want to just, they have like certain subject matters that they love.
A niche, yes.
They want to shoot this. But I didn't really have that. I didn't really know what I liked yet. And I was sort of struggling, and I took a little bit of this and a little bit of that. And, you try different techniques and different things. And when I hit the composite work, I was like, oh, my God, I'm in love. Because this is storytelling. I can pull all of these sorts of disparate elements together, and I can pull things together in a studio and shoot them and then bring all of these elements into Photoshop to tell this visual story, on one single, with one single image. And I fell in love with that. It's oh, like God. I used to paint. I used to oil paint and stuff like that. And when I was a teenager, and I was never, you know, great at it. I was always quite messy, and my parents were, you know, saints for putting up with the sheer volume of oil paints that I would get on everything. But I would come home from lessons with more oil, more paint on me than I had managed to get on the canvas. And you know, I was like 15, 16 years old. I was still, you know, incapable of being neat. But the photography is like, it's like that sort of visual storytelling, but it, for me, it was much faster and much more sophisticated. I could pull things together that would have taken me a year to paint, but I can pull it together in, you know, a few days' time instead. And I was like, oh my God, it opened this door to creativity that I'm just itching to race through.
I love
and,
it.
And play with.
You're,
yeah.
You're
so
exploring all that.
Let's take a call. Okay. Hi, 770, you're live on the air.
Hey, Pam, it's Susan Cicero. I'm listening
Hi.
To your show tonight because I loved what you posted today, and you know I immediately ordered the book. And
I know
listening to Tony, I am so happy that I did.
Tony,
oh,
say hi
you.
To Susan Cicero, who is just a
Hi.
Lovely friend. Susan, you live in Atlanta, don't you?
I do. I live in Atlanta.
Okay.
Pam, I'm a very slow reader, so I am real picky about what I choose to to add
yes.
to my bookshelf, and I am so excited listening
you
to you. I can't wait.
I have been telling
well,
you about
you.
This book, haven't I, Susan?
Oh, my gosh, yeah. You said if I was going to read one thing this year, I had to read this.
That's right. That's right.
Well, thank you.
But, you know, I remember when I, years and years ago, when I first met, fell in love with, and started reading Anne Rice, and I have a feeling maybe I'm going to have that same feeling all over again.
It's going to be
oh,
even
well, thank
better
you.
Because it's so grounded in the real thing. These are things that you can know, Susan. I love Anne, don't get me wrong. I love Anne and Chris, her son. They've been on the show. They're wonderful people. But this is
oh, something new, something wonderful.
This is wonderful. Yes, you're absolutely right. This is something that, and you know me, Susan, you know how many books I read. This
oh, my
is
God, yes.
Something, this is one that just was the stumper of all times. This stopped me dead in my tracks. I couldn't even begin reading another book until I reread this one. That's how good the book is. Susan, you know what I'm
wow.
going to do? You're going to send me a PM, and I'm going to send you an autographed copy of Tony's book in paper.
Oh, my gosh. Hooray.
Okay.
Awesome. Yeah.
Thank you so much, and I really look forward to it. It was nice talking with you, Tony, and Pam,
thank
always you.
You.
Just let
thank
you all
you,
go now.
Thank
bye-bye.
You. Send me a note with your address. She's so sweet. Yeah, she's adorable. I love Susan. She's just the kindest, nicest thing. She takes care of her mom. She's always happy, always in a good mood. You know, those kind of people you like to be around. So,
absolutely. Absolutely.
So, I'm curious, when you're, I know that you're doing the composite work in your photography. You notice I keep going back
mm-hmm.
to this, but, and, you know, you and I shared some personal history with each other, and I know that for a while, going behind the camera was really important for you. It was your outlet
mm-hmm.
when you didn't have another
right.
creative outlet. Even though people might not know that you're a journalist and that you were a painter, and you know, it's not like you sat around doing nothing all your life.
yeah.
Now, are you in a frame of mind that you are looking at different subject matter that might be less dark, or are you still fascinated by the darkness of some of the photography?
I am fascinated by the darkness of the photography. I think that there is this gritty reality, this sort of gritty surreality, maybe is the better way of looking at it. That is, you know, it's what nightmares are made of. It's what, you know, sort of exposing the darkness is the first step to healing. Sort of
yes.
thing, and so I'm looking at those, you know, those sorts of images, and I think people would be surprised about that because when they see when they read Bobby Faye, you know, Bobby Faye was funny and everything, but there yes. is a real dark story underneath Bobby Faye. There was always a dark story. There was this pathos underneath what her life was about that's very, very dark, but she faces it by commenting on the absurdities in her life, and
yes.
and you know, there's always the absurd around her. But I really, you know, I like the idea of taking something that may be very scary and very ugly and making it beautiful and not so scary anymore. Maybe something
maybe.
That we can say, I can understand it now.
Bringing it into the light a little bit, maybe.
Exactly. Bringing it into the light a little bit. Finding a way to make that lost thing found again in that sense. You know, I think as we grow up, I think we lose pieces of ourselves or pieces of our childhood because we're afraid of things. We're afraid of trying something and failing. We're afraid of
yes.
new steps. We are, you know, I mean, I was terrified, you know, in a lot of ways to write this book because it was going to make me so vulnerable. But I think that, and that's something that I wanted to bring to the images. I want people to see things that they may not have normally thought about would be beautiful. I mean, I don't think if you said to somebody, a young girl with angels that are bleeding, you know, I don't think they would think, oh, that's a beautiful image. And yet it tells a story, and that story is heartbreakingly beautiful in its way.
It is.
And
yes.
and so finding those kinds of, you know, why, you know, asking, you know, begs the question, why are they bleeding? Why are they bleeding rose petals? And finding those juxtapositions in life is my approach to life in a lot of ways. It's like I don't get angry at very many things. I get annoyed with injustice, you know, and people who
yes.
are just dunderheaded and stuff like that. You know, I get incredibly angry at cruelty and brutality and
yes.
and bullying of any kind, and abuse
yes.
will send me completely over. But for the most part in life, I look at what has broken us.
The underlying issue, yes.
yes.
I understand where you're coming from.
Right. You know, what is it inside of us that is broken, and how do we address that to start healing? And what are those steps? What are those things that we need to do and to look at? And you do that a lot with humor, but you also do that a lot, but like you said, you know, earlier, bringing something to the light, because when you do
sure.
bring something to the light and it's not hidden anymore and you're not, it's not buried
less,
down
less
in your
scary.
Psyche somewhere.
Right.
Yeah, it
right.
is less scary. You can find yeah. better ways to deal with it, I think. So.
Absolutely. Let's take another call. Hi, it's 352. You're on the air.
Well, hi, Pam. Hi, Tony.
Hey.
I just want to say that I started the Saints of the Lost and Found today, and I'm just totally blown away.
Wow, thank you. Thank you. What's
Pam,
your name?
Pam. My name's Teresa. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Pam,
go ahead, Teresa.
Pam kept telling me that you've got to read this book, and I'm a first-time reader of your book, and I am also a professional book reviewer, and I don't even have anything that I can compare this book to. It is just totally blown me away. It's awesome.
Wow. Wow. Thank you. That's amazing.
Yeah.
Thank you so much. Thank
yeah.
you.
Yeah. Teresa, you read across genre, don't you, too? You read a lot of different genres of books.
I do, yes.
And can you think of where this lands on your genre meter? Because I sure can't.
I can't. I really can't.
I know.
It doesn't really have a place in my genre. But it is
exactly.
It's the most absorbing book that I have read in a long time. And
let me ask you something. Are you reading it as slow as I did?
I'm having to. Because
I told
I have to absorb everything.
I know. Isn't that amazing? The book
forces
you to slow down and look at everything the author is showing you in the story,
well,
right?
I'm a very fast reader by nature,
right?
But I can't read this book fast. I mean, I'm at 38%, but I'm trying to take in every word, and I've never.
Yes.
I mean, you just don't get that very often.
We talk about skimming through books, right? We talk about skimming through pages and stuff because you kind of know there's this narrative going on and it's describing the scenery and all that. There's not an extra word that doesn't belong there, is there?
There's not. But every word is so descriptive. It describes exactly the scene that you're looking at.
Thank you.
It's amazing.
Thank you. Well, one of the goals that I had, too, is that every single thing that you read is critical from page one and has something to do with the ending, but in a way that you're not going to expect, you know, kind of thing. So if I can say that I had a goal language-wise, that was the goal. I wanted everything to resonate and have double meaning later on. So
I
appreciate that it's engrossing. I'm so grateful for that. Thank you.
Well, this is a book that you want to savor every word. You don't want to skip through. You don't want to skim. You want to read every single word. And you just don't get that.
I'm telling you. See, I know what I was talking about when I recommended that book, didn't I? I really
did.
Thank you, Teresa. I appreciate your input. Do you have a question for Toni?
No, I just wanted to tell her how much I'm really enjoying her book.
I'm so glad
you
called in.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Teresa.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks, Toni.
Bye-bye.
Isn't that nice?
That's wonderful.
I love it when someone reads a recommended book and they get exactly what I'm trying to say. And I hope that as the author of said book, I'm getting exactly what you're trying to say, but I think I do.
Oh, yeah, I think I do. You're nailing
it. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah,
thanks.
You're nailing it. So
thanks.
Thank you. And well, thank you. I mean, it's so amazing to hear that kind of joy in a reader and in your voice as well.
As soon as you sent me the book, and I was so blown away by it. I mean, for my listeners, I want you to know, no matter what book you have in front of you, if you love the book, please go and write a review. I cannot stress to you how important it is. Not only is it important just for the business end of writing books, but you encourage authors to continue on to create beautiful work for you. And make no mistake, books are beautiful works. Whether you love them or hate them, books, somebody's going to love it and it's a beautiful work. So please go and write a review. And if you've been convinced that I'm not crazy and that I really do know my authors because I think I do, you will just be blown away by The Saints of the Lost and Found. Let's take another call, Toni.
Okay.
Hi, you're live on the air, 337.
Hi, Pam. This is Taylor Ann. How are you?
Hi, Taylor Ann. How are you? Taylor Ann is a lovely, lovely romance writer, romantic suspense. She was on my show on Wednesday night. Taylor, say hi to Toni.
Oh, hey. Hi.
Hey.
Hey,
Taylor. It's good to meet you.
You too. I don't really have a question for you, but I do want to say your book just sounds so intriguing. I just went on Amazon, bought it. Can't wait to start it.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you.
I'm so glad, Taylor. You're going to love this book. I promise
you. It sounds like it.
You're just going to love it. You're just going to love it, okay? And you call me and tell me if you don't just love it. I don't want to give any more away from it or sway you any more than I already have, but I think you're going to be really, really excited to read it, okay? And then you send me an email when you finish reading it, okay?
I certainly will.
You're a doll, baby.
Well,
I love you, Taylor Ann.
Thank you.
Thank you, Taylor, honey. Have a great night, honey. Talk to you later.
Bye, Taylor.
All right. That's Taylor Ann. Go and get her books, too. Bye, Taylor.
Absolutely.
How about that? Isn't that nice?
That's fine. Oh, yeah.
I love that. All right, Cher, our time is up. You got to go home. You got to start doing your creative stuff. I'm going to see you in NOLA this year, aren't I?
Yes, you are. Yes, you have to come to the building and come hang out with me.
You know I will. I'm there.
Yeah.
Tony, thank you so much for being here. Honey, if we want to look at your photography, where do we go?
Well, we are getting it back up on my website probably within the next week. So we have it all. We had it up there. We had it with a vendor who kept raising their prices, and I just didn't believe in that. I really wanted to be able to offer it to people at a better, more affordable prices. So we found someone, and we're getting all that switched over this week. So on my website, TonyMcGeeCausey.com, pretty soon at the top you'll see the word portfolio, and you'd be able to go find everything there. So.
Because you know as soon as I buy a photo – I will leave it at your house until I see you in September because I want mine signed, of course, personally.
Absolutely. Yes, absolutely.
Tony McGeeCausey, The Saints of the Lost and Found, one of the best books I've read in 10 years. Honestly, you have to go and get it. And please go to Tony's website, TonyMcGeeCausey.com, and sign up for her newsletter. You're just going to be tickled pink at all the things she talks about. Go find her on Facebook and at Tony McGeeCausey on Twitter. Tony, come back again, will you?
I would love to. Thank you so much for having me tonight.
Come sit behind the microphone and interview like one of our friends, okay?
I need to do that. I really do.
You should get Rob on. Get Rob on, the devil. He's been on for a year or so.
I get to torment Rob? Okay, that's even more incentive.
There you go. I'm telling you.
I love Rob.
I know. Who doesn't? We're talking about Robert Gregory Brown, who's a friend to both of us. I want to remind everyone, on Monday, Noir on the Air, Eric Pruitt is our host. We're doing the Southern Throwdown for Flash Fiction. Tuesday, Susan Donovan is coming back. Wednesday, CJ Carpenter. And on Friday, Rebecca Warner. And then I'll be live from the Southwest Readers Fest. And, Tony, I love you, darling. Thank you for being here.
Thank you so much for having me. Love you back. Thank
love you.
Love
you
right back.
Really,
I just had a blast.
Thanks. Bye-bye. All right, that's our show for tonight, folks. Thank you so much, and thank you, Mom and Dad. Go get Tony's book. Good night.